Fine. We don't have so much time, so let's talk briefly about the Kruvim. Aviva Zornberg points out from Rabbi Nobachia a very mild linguistic point, which is interesting, and she makes a big deal of it. She always says things that are different than what I'm thinking. Sometimes I understand them, often I don't, because she gets into psychoanalysis and I don't understand psychoanalysis and Freudian stuff. But I read her because she's brilliant, and when she says things that I get that are like very out of the box from the way I think, I'm like very, you know, it changes the way I think. But yeah, I'm not Mr. Gall to understand that. But this is a small point, but I think it's a very fair point. So the pasuk tells you, Vasita Shnayim Kruvim Zahav. Right? Now what's the problem with that? Vasita Shnayim Kruvim Zahav. What's weird about that pasuk? You should make two Kruvim out of gold. What's weird about that? There's something weird about it, but it's very, very subtle. One second, Avi. I'm just doing Parsha. Yeah, what? V'asita Shnayim Kruvim Zahav. So it's not the tenth, it's the Shnayim. Right, what should it be? Shnei, right? Shnei. Right, like Shnei Luchot HaBrit. Right, two. What's the difference between Shnayim and Shnei? So Shnei usually means of like two parts of a unit, right? Shnei luchot habrit, the two luchot. Shnayim is two distinct parts, exactly, right? Exactly, right? It's a very subtle point, right? So Rabbi Nobachaya picked up on this. Right, he says, Shnei is Lashon Hashvaya, Kmo Shnei Luchot Haidut, Shnei Kvasim, Shnei Seirim, Shnayim Ki Chalukim Heim Be'anyanam Zachar V'Nekeva. He says, he thinks the secret to that is Chazal's notion that the Kruvim, one is male, one is female, and therefore their identity is in the fact that they are distinct. And then he picks up on the Midrash that, right, all the Midrashim that pick up on their being male and female, and it highlighting the love of God and the Jewish people being like the love of men and women, right? And then, right, all the Midrashim that on Yom Kippur they would see that if things were going well between the Jews and God, so they'd be embraced, and if not, they'd be turned separate. And so all of those Midrashim, right, and all that elaboration and the Midrashic imagination, he thinks is dependent on not just there being two Kruvim, but there being two Kruvim which are different, which are distinct. That's the whole point. Now, Aviva Zornberg adds another element, right? She notes this, but then she says there's another thing that emerges from this. And that is that, right, many people are disturbed by the Kruvim. Why are the Kruvim in the center of the Mishkan? That seems idolatrous. But the key, as many Mefarshim point out, is that where does God speak to Moshe from? Mibein Shnei HaKruvim. Not from the Kruvim, but between, meaning from the void, from the emptiness. Right, meaning the theological chiddush of the Torah is, it's like ki'ilu, there are idols in the Kodesh HaKadashim, and God speaks from the void. Right? It's like as drawing your attention to the fact that God speaks not from these as much as you possibly could. And she notes that Rabbi Nobachai's grammatical point points in that direction as well. But that the whole point of the Kruvim is that they are distinct, and therefore there's space. Therefore there's space. Right? Meaning they're not, right? They are two Kruvim, and they're distinct. And that's why when God speaks, Mibein Shnei HaKruvim, Right? That's from the void. And because they are defined as different, therefore the space in them is not, you know, it's not like the donut hole, right? It's not like part of the donut that it has, it's emptiness, because they are different things, which draws attention to the fact that God is in the void, that God is in the space, that God is in, and she thinks she develops really nicely, is the theology in many ways of the Mishkan, right? The fact that, and you think about this, right? Shlomo says this when he builds the Beit HaMikdash. The heavens can't keep you, right? Shmayim b'shmei Hashem lo yichal kalucha. So how can, right? Kiyam abayit av shev net l'shimcha. So how could it be that I could build a house? Right? Meaning it doesn't make sense because you don't actually fit because you're outside of space and time. So therefore, the Mishkan consistently has to use negative space, right? To highlight that theological point. And she thinks that that's evident most powerfully right here, in the fact that the Kruvim are, there's a space. Now, the truth is that Rabbi Bachai himself says the way you get that across is because he thinks the Kruvim are here to teach about the existence of Malachim, and the way that you think about God is that they are pointing up. So it's not just the space in between them, but it's up, that it's pointing out of them. And, you know, you could point to different ones. I'll just note that I mentioned this, I think, to Sean last week maybe, but Ray Ginsberg, you know, I was asking people to just give me book recommendations because I've been running through books pretty fast. So he gave me this brief biography or history of the number zero, right, which is Nechmad. And one of the things that in this book they note, he has a little bit on the theology of zero, and he notes that for the Rambam and for the Kabbalists, right, zero and emptiness and void is actually intrinsic. Like, the Greeks were afraid of zero, right? Pythagoras was afraid of zero, right? They didn't believe in zero. They had no zero. There was just nothing, right? You just didn't count. There was no idea of, like, a positive emptiness, right? They thought it was, like, contrary to all philosophy. What? No, they didn't believe in that, right? Think about it. Aristotle, part of it was the world needed to be infinite, right? Because he didn't want to, because if there was a beginning, then there was a void before it. So this book, it's not a religious book, it's a mathematician, but he does a little bit of theology, and he notes that in Jewish theology, especially medieval Jewish theology, we Jews went to the opposite extreme, right? We embraced void and zero, right? We actually said that the world was created from tohu vabohu, from nothingness. And the central thesis of creation is that it's yesh me'ayin, it's something from nothing. The Kabbalists refer to, and the Rambam in different ways, right? God is described as via negativa, right? Only what we don't understand, but the way they say it in Kabbalah is he's the Ein Sof, right? Not the infinite, but infinite literally just means there is, right? Zero end, right? Right? Meaning we embrace that theology because zero and infinite for us, right, are overlapping, and because we believe in a creation, we believe in a moment before creation in which there was nothingness, there was void, and that's actually, as opposed to being anathema to our theology, it's actually central to Jewish theology. So that, I think, adds the fact that the Mishkan, so to speak, God's space, is because he's infinite, he's represented by the void, right? That actually works very well with the way we think about our theology, right? That if you think that God is finite, so that's one thing, but if you think God is infinite, so the way to represent infinity, since you can't represent infinity, is to represent it in zero, right? To represent it in empty space. So I think that imagery actually plays very nicely with the way Aviva Zornberg develops Rabbeinu Bechaya's diuk about the Kruvim. So that's a new way of thinking, because the Mishkan, you always got to think of new ways and new insights about it. Yeah, Noah, what do you want to say? And I know I'm late here on this. Okay, fine.